comics,
movies,
music,
video games,
technology,
Blu-ray,
television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 second,
please.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Uh-oh.
I want to go.
Don't show me in the outer space.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe! Aloha!
Out Now is a film podcast with Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We also bring in discussion about the latest trailers, box office results, and predictions, a callback to past films similar to the main film of the week, games, and other fun stuff. This is... Are we numbering this episode, or are we doing
it's
a bonus?
It's kind of a special episode.
Let's call it a bonus. Let's do that, because it's the holiday season, and there's so many... the movie's coming out, and we're just trying to get as many reviews kind of recorded and done and out there for you guys to listen to as we can. So yeah, we'll just call this a bonus, as we've done in previous years as well. And today we have a threefer, actually. We're going to just basically just do straight reviews. We have Anchorman 2, American Hustle, and Inside Llewyn Davis. Three big releases for this season. Three movies I'm very excited to talk about, and joining us to discuss these movies we have from Laramie.com, Ropasilicon.com, the Brad and Laramie on Movies podcast, and the upcoming documentary, Whoop Dreams, whoop whoop, it's Laramie Legal.
You should have just called that PTSD Dreams.
Yeah.
That would have been a lot easier on me. Now, love the Juggalos. Juggalo life. One love. Whoop whoop.
I will definitely link the trailer to Whoop Dreams in the show notes, but I'm very excited.
We got a surprising amount of views on that. The whole thing has been surprising. I wouldn't have thought anyone would kickstart that. I wouldn't have thought I would go, and I wouldn't have thought anyone would watch the trailer. So it's really just been a dream at this point.
And yeah. You anchor that trailer. It begins with you describing this thing you're going to do.
I'm all over that movie. Trust me.
Oh my God, I'm excited.
Yeah, I've watched the rough cut. It's pretty incredible, and we're applying to some film festivals, believe it or not, so who knows.
All right.
Yeah, people are going to pay me to go to the gathering at some point here. It's crazy.
For Whoop Dreams 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, which you'll never do again, maybe.
No, I will never go back. Like, if that check doesn't have six figures, you can just stow the request, because it's not happening.
What if it's five figures and that grape drink, or whatever it is? What is it?
Negative. Not going back. Never going back.
Okay. All right. Minor announcement stuff. Happy holidays to the listeners, by the way, if I don't remember to say that later on. What else? As I said, this is the first of probably a few bonus episodes, so we'll have other reviews of, like, Walter Mitty and Wolf of Wall Street, definitely, and whatever else we can get our mouths on, too. I don't know
what else to say. Mouths on? What? Yeah. This is some fruitcake.
Yeah. iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. Helps out the show, helps people find our show, because we'd love to have more people find our show, and also leave us iTunes reviews and ratings, but, you know, whatever.
It's in defense.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We will have a top 10 show probably early January, just to make sure that everyone that's on that show has a chance to see all the movies that are kind of around at that time, except probably Her for Abe. He probably won't get a chance to see Her unless
I think it's coming out like the second week of January.
Yeah,
something.
It comes out the 10th, I think, with Lone Survivor, so you can double that up. That should be hilarious.
I want to mention that my top 10 comes out Monday the 23rd.
On
FilmCom. And I will say a movie that you're reviewing that rhymes with Schmalter Kitty is in that top 10.
Ooh.
Yeah. And a movie that you're also talking about that you could call Dub of Dub Street is not in that top 10.
Oh. So,
yeah. Make of that of what you will. Yeah.
There might be a reverse in my version of that sentence, but let's move on. Okay.
Controversial already.
That's like the people wanting more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm probably gonna see both of those and one of some of these other movies again within that span of time. So we'll, because mine doesn't come out till the end of the year, so I have plenty of time to do mine up. Even though
mine comes out in 2014. Yeah. So. Thanks a lot, guys, for rubbing it in my face.
Hey, if you want to come see Her with me in L.A. again, just drive down.
Yeah, her is amazing.
It is.
You can see her.
Her is, yeah. We'll get to that.
The Zero Dark Thirty of my...
Yeah, we'll basically review her after everyone else has already seen it, yeah. After I've already pronounced it wherever it lands on my top 10. Anyway, I have one No Everybody question.
Oh, interesting.
It's kind of a special request, so for the listener that really wants to hear this, I hope you're listening and happy. Laramie, can you do a Christopher Walken impersonation?
I can, but only with like specific words. Do you want me to give it a shot?
Let me. I can.
All right.
Here we go. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you know.
Yeah.
Words, go. Yeah.
Let me put the face on. Here we go. So I says to the guy, "Guy, what are we doing?" Or something like that. So something like that, right?
It's yeah.
I mean, I just got up. Give me a break. At like 3 p.m., I would crush that, guys.
I had to take a sip. I have one as well. It two mice fall in a bucket of cream. One mice drowns, gives up. The other mice turns that cream so damn hard. He turns that cream into butter. I'm that second mouse. That's all I have as far as Christopher Walken impersonations go. Abe, do you have one?
No. I'll have to work on it. I'll give it to you guys later.
No, I just like that honesty is once again our best policy at Out Now.
I've never done this as much.
You're going to want that cowbell in there. Remember that.
Sure. Guys. I guys. I pounce one leg at a time.
Then I get up and I make gold records.
Yeah. All right. I'm glad Christopher Walken's in none of the movies we're talking about today, so we can move on now. But there you go, Gary. You got it. Okay. We have nothing else to do except these reviews. Let's jump right into it. Okay. So first one up, let's do our review for Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues.
That is going to make one hell of a story.
From deep in the hinterlands to the greatest metropolis on Earth, they came to reclaim the glory they once knew.
Welcome to GNN,
the global news network.
Tell us about the new head honcho.
Linda Jackson is a winner.
Linda Jackson, how are you, my friend?
This is Linda.
Oh, black. Black.
Bronze.
Black.
Aren't you the guy who lost his job to his wife?
Wow, right on the lens.
I'm sorry, sweetie, you're the best. Quick, yes.
Hmm? Oh!
Undaunted by the challenges they faced, they would not rest until they were number one again.
Yeah! Okay, that should have been some of the trailer for Anchorman 2. The news team is back! Ron and the gang have returned and are headed to New York to be a part of the 24-hour news network that will make broadcast history in 1980. Ron will face many adversaries, including a rival news anchor, possibly his own wife, and most importantly, himself, as Ron must figure out how to balance his work with his family. I think that was succinct, right?
Yes.
Laramie, what did you think of Anchorman 2?
I enjoyed Anchorman 2, as a matter of fact. I thought that it had, against the first one, it had more consistent laughs, but it felt too long, and it had less huge laughs, I guess would be my more complicated critique there. And I love how Adam McKay keeps sneaking in social commentary, like in the back door of his comedies, mm-hmm. because no one else is really doing that. So Other Guys, you know, was all about corporate malfeasance, and Anchorman is really about how news just took a hard turn south towards the bottom. And do you guys remember when, like, Headline News came out? I remember watching Headline News and being like, what is this? Like, it goes every 30 minutes forever, you know? Like, it was just so ridiculous.
Here's a question. I have just a random question. Were you guys reading, like, the bottom text when they
yes.
were doing the
yeah.
like,
when the they're car- doing the scrolls?
I couldn't yeah. help but read that. It's some really funny stuff.
8-year-old does whatever. It's like...
My favorite stuff is the stuff with the shark. And I won't say more than that, but I love the stuff with the shark, even though it's completely goofy, obviously.
I'll go next, just because I want to explain, like, I agree with you that the movie's too long, and I know, like, the exact, like, two scenes you can take out of this. One is this kind of, I won't, like, spoil it, but one's like this, well, one's a dinner table scene, which I think everyone knows about, but the other is this kind of 15-minute stretch where a certain thing happens that Ron goes through, and then it, like, ends, and you can take all of that out, and the movie would probably be better for it, but I think it's just so funny. I've seen the movie twice now, by the way, and I think it's just so funny.
It's the kung fu part of Anchorman 2. He's gotta go back and learn.
I just, all that stuff's so funny to me, where I just can't, like, take it out and be like, oh.
It's so silly, which is why it's hilarious, but it also, like, has nothing to do with anything. And so that's why, but I understand why they did it, because it's clearly the silliest part and pretty awesome, but
And it even, like, aids character in ways, but, like, I don't know how much strength you need of the Ron Burgundy character in this movie, but, I mean, it's just funny to me, and it's just absurdist humor. That's, like, what I like about the first movie as well. Like, it has... There's not, like, too much plot. Like, the first movie, the plot depends on, like, a panda that's mentioned, like, once in the first hour, and then, like, it comes back to that at the end. There's no plot for the rest of the movie, really. This one's strangely plot-heavy kind of in the front, and then it just goes into weird places as it moves along. Like it has a thing about, like, an airline being, like, problematic, and you think that's gonna, like, take up the main portion of the film, and then that doesn't mean anything. That's just, like, one thing they kind of knock out, and it goes just into different directions involving Ron and his son. And it's just, the thing I like about this movie a lot is, it's not like Hangover 2. It's not the same movie again. Like, and that was something I was anticipating to begin with, not that it wasn't gonna be that, because I think Adam McKay and Will Ferrell are smart guys. I think that they know if they're gonna make a movie that's a sequel to this weird thing that was Anchorman, they're going to be smart about it, and that's what I feel like they pulled off. It's indulgent in ways, because it is really long, and it has a lot of bits that feel like they're just for them, and hopefully other people laugh at them, but I laughed a lot in this movie, and that's what I'm very happy with. I went to a comedy I wanted to laugh at, and I laughed a lot at it. So.
And since you've seen it twice... Was it funnier the second time around?
It plays in the way like where most Adam McKay comedies work, where I feel like they're just gonna keep working on me and for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Like I'll laugh differently at different jokes and
the stupid stuff gets stupider and more hilarious. Like
it does. Seems like, yeah. And that, like, I think it's quite clear that I love Anchorman. Laramie, I assume you like Anchorman quite a bit, the first one.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so Abe, are you a big fan of the first Anchorman, and do you like this movie?
I am a big fan of the first Anchorman, and there's not much difference in my second or my opinion of the second one from you guys. So I did like it a lot too. I laughed pretty consistently. I didn't think it was too long, but maybe it's because I was just kind of wondering where this movie was going to go. I do agree that there's the section where Ron has to go redefine himself that could be a little bit shorter, but then that would work against Laramie's shark scenes. So
that's the problem.
For that thing. But I especially liked the commentary in this, and that's probably because the first one was really absurd and just full of laughs, but this one actually has a point, but it does bring up the point of, hey,
guys, stuff in there, like it feels
actually doing journalism here. You guys are just doing sensationalism.
I actually have a super insidery story. I'm gonna try not to say names because I could probably get in trouble. I'm not sure how wide your listening audience is, but there's a chance this could come back to haunt me. So there's a guy in our who's a critic, you know, and he has a radio show, and he usually ends his segments with, and I want to get this right, like, and we'll be back on in this God's greatest country on God's green earth or something. Or like the great, like it's some. Yeah. And then, so when Ron Burgundy goes, like, don't have a good night, have an American night, I was just like, that has to hit home for that guy, right? Like, it has to be like, that's you he's talking about. Anyway.
But yeah, I love the absurdness of it all. You know, stuff like Greg Kinnear stuff. Also, a small little right hook by his son, Walter, which I thought was really funny, just because it looks ridiculous. Moments.
And then, so when you see it again, they play like even better because you know certain things. And you're like you see where certain jokes are going and like how they like seed them in, and it's just so funny.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the last things that I'll say before we open up for open discussion is just really funny, like sort of smash cuts and weird scene cuts that remind me of Casa de Mi Padre. Where it's like, you know, Brick Tamlin's laughing and all of a sudden he's not. And I think that was pretty much done on purpose. And I laughed a lot about it, after thinking about that. So I think with more time, it's probably just going to be more absurd and a little bit more funny. Just like repeat viewings of Casa de Mi Padre.
There's one amazing smash cut where like they look at like Brian Fantana's art. And like, and they're like, oh, I hate Mondays too, and I hate Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. And they all like start to laugh, and then just immediately
then just
cut
cuts,
like right.
Yeah,
there.
Super fast. Yeah,
yeah, that's
I know
funny.
Exactly what you're talking about.
Now you mentioned the commentary, and that's like honestly, I should have expected that more because really, since Anchorman, like that was the loosest one in terms of what McKay was doing as a director. Like that was his first like movie. Like Talladega Nights has it. I think there's it could maybe be argued in Step Brothers. I don't watch Step Brothers enough, so I don't know. Like,
Step Brothers is amazing. The more you go back to it, like, I can't think I gave it a C when I first saw it, and like, I'm at A plus or something now. Like, I watch it all the time. Yeah, it's really, really funny now.
That's the one that grows on, that's been growing on me the most. Like, the other ones I tend to like, I liked off the bat, like, a lot already. Step Brothers one where, like, the more I go back to it, the more I really like it. Also, the commentary on that movie is hilarious, but,
the gag scenes are pretty funny, too. The gag reel. Well, on all of them, I guess.
With Anchorman, it feels like there probably is, like, a five-hour movie here that they've chiseled away at. Like, you know, like, the first Anchorman had a whole other movie that they just basically cut out because it just wasn't testing well or whatever. I can't imagine not seeing, like, a ginormous special features package on Anchorman 2, because it feels like there's so much they wanted to do, and I'm surprised that they're able to make such a coherent movie from what they had shot.
Yeah, I definitely think that they're... Well, probably just because there were so many outtakes from everyone laughing and everyone trying to possibly one-up each other.
Well, just going in weird directions based on their own improvisation and stuff. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's, like, every commercial you see, there's maybe one joke that's actually in the movie and everything else isn't. Like, there's so much, like, extra material here.
That's what you get when you work with Ron Burgundy, I guess.
I guess so.
There was also the weird scene where Will Ferrell starts singing and the face on his son is just so sad. And I just thought, man, what did they tell that kid? Because they do some, you know, swooping shots and then they actually focus in on him toward the end of the song. And I was thinking, man, that kid has it going on.
I liked his son quite a bit, by the way. I think he captured kind of the naivety of Ron Burgundy really well. And every time he said, Dad, like, it made me really happy.
Like, he had a super simple blank face, like, throughout. Like, that kid's an amazing actor. Yeah. Unless he's really just like that. I don't know.
Unless he is like that. Cyber, you have on, Gary.
Bring me the simplest child you can find. Cast him.
They pulled it off. Like, it's funny. I, you know, that's what, like, the set, like, things that went into the making of this movie. I really love the soundtrack of this movie. Like, it's just this kind of, like, late 70s, early 80s kind of.
The opening, too, is, like, what? Run Like the Wind, I think?
Yeah.
It is. Oh, so good. It is. So good. But McKay is also really good at that. Like, his soundtracks tend to be awesome. Like, he has a great ear for when scenes go together, you know, like musically. So,
well, the same with his action directing too. Like, I thought the other guys works as a competent action film, and Talladega Nights is a great car racing action film. Like, he's a good director in terms of, like, putting it together and making it look like legit. Like,
the most underrated aspect of this whole shoot match though is Pharrell's ability to sing. Will Ferrell has the voice of an angel. I mean, they say it in Step Brothers, but it's so, like, earnest and sentimental, but, like, saying the craziest things that it works every time on me. Like, I wish I could watch a mashup of him singing. Like, he's great. He's a great singer.
And honestly, that's something that's largely why I like these movies. I think it's because of Will Ferrell's his earnestness. Like, he, all the characters he plays, none of them are, like, horrible people, and I think that's what makes people come back to them. Like, I feel like maybe the Hangover movies, like, for example, like, they're characters that you don't necessarily want to hang out with very much.
Well, I mean, Ashley Schaefer is kind of a douche. But...
Yeah, that's not... That's different.
That's HBO.
That's the Danny McBride, Jodie Hill touch, where the characters are just horribly unlikable, but yet you can't help but watch them. The Adam McKay movies, like, you can't, there's an inherent sweetness to the characters Will Ferrell plays, especially Ron Burgundy, which is why you can forgive him for a scene like the one at the dinner table with his black girlfriend and their black family, like, because it's coming out of
no harm.
It's coming out of a place of naivety, and, like, there's that inherent sweetness that makes you kind of want to root for this person no matter the crazy decisions that he makes, such as trying to brush his teeth with a lobster. Like,
Ron, wouldn't you know? Like, no, I wouldn't.
But yeah, I.
Not much to say. Yeah,
we have two other movies to talk about. So yeah, I think I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily surprised that I liked it, but I guess I'm kind of surprised that I liked it as much as I did, given that it's a sequel to one of the most heavily quotable movies made in the last, like, 20 years. So
that one was a really slow sociological build, though, or cultural build. Like, Anchorman in theaters didn't make all that much money. It just seems like everyone has seen it after.
It became sort of, like, cultish, because I remember I saw it after theaters with my friend in San Diego, and I was thinking, this is pretty good. Why didn't I see this when it came out of theaters?
So, yeah, and the idea of Ron Burgundy has really grown in people's imagination, too, it seems
like. Yeah, I mean, he's got, like, his clothes museum in theaters and also at the studio, right? So,
and I think he's in the Smithsonian, like, some of his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Last thing I'll say about this is just I hope that people take it seriously with the commentary, because yeah, news right now, not really news. So
no, it's dead on, which is scary.
Let's see here. Global temperatures rise half a degree. Alarm climate scientists. Boring. What if we show a porno instead of the news?
Freddy?
No, absolutely not.
Freddy, come on. We're just brainstorming here. We're trying to figure out how to make the news less boring, and you act like we peed in your milkshake.
The news is supposed to be boring, Ron. Serious stuff.
I just don't know why we have to tell the people what they need to hear. Why can't we just tell them what they want to hear?
Wait. Say that again?
I said, why do we have to tell the people what they need to hear? Why can't we just tell them what they want to hear?
And what do they want to hear, Ron?
That we live in the greatest country God ever created. Damn straight!
It's scary that Adam McKay has to be the guy making the message film.
Yeah, he's got to be the catalyst. Or I guess the voice of reason.
I just hope people like go to see a comedy and come out laughing at a comedy. Like, I know it's subjective, so I can't, you know, expect everyone to laugh as hysterically as I do, but I mean, there's a notion to like write off this thing as like, oh, it's Anchorman 2, there's no way it can be good as the first one. It doesn't matter. Like, it's just, if you want to go have some fun and you like these character, like, give it a chance and have fun.
Oh, and I just thought, in terms of cameos, it's not cameo crazy, which I liked. There is one scene, but it's not like every turn.
It doesn't feel like the movie's hinging on the fact that it has these people in it.
Yeah, you see a lot of that in repeat comedies. They just throw things in there, and it's over the top. But this one is done, I think it's handled a little bit better.
I'm also amazed at how well that surprise was preserved, for me at least, because I did not see what happened coming. So, there we go.
Yeah.
Let's get to our rating. Each week and out now, there today, we rate movies based on when would you go and see them, and we have our scale from IMAX to theater, Dollar Theater, Netflix, HBO TV, or just kind of forget about it. On that scale, Laramie, where would you put Anchorman 2?
I mean, I don't think you need to see it in IMAX, but I would see it in theaters for sure, immediately. Oh,
not 3D, HFR, no, IMAX?
I don't think effects-wise it's very strong. I'll give him that.
It's not going to win in that department this year. For
not now. Not after the Academy hears Laramie's rant on the effects. Abe?
I'd say theater.
Yeah, I'd say theater as well. Yeah, just fun times. All right, that's Anchorman 2. Let's move on. Let's get to our next review. Our next review is going to be of the latest film from David O. Russell, American Hustle. Unintended rhyme.
I believe that you should treat people the way that you want to be treated.
Didn't Jesus say that?
Yeah. Right. Also, always take a favor over money. I think Jesus said that as well.
I don't know if he said the second one, but he might have said the first one.
Everybody thought, oh, Richie DeMaso's gonna stay in the office. I'm outside on the field. I got people working for me. My ideas. I'm running the show. I'm the quarterback, and I'm not gonna settle.
It's not for me to say.
He wasn't necessarily in good shape, and he had this comb over that was rather elaborate. He had this confidence that drew me to him.
My father, he taught me to believe that all people are good, and to be good to all people.
Life is ridiculous. And you know that I would never say anything bad about your father in front of you, but your father is a sick son of a bitch.
Daddy's a sick son of a bitch.
Don't repeat that. But yes.
All right, so that should have been some of the trailer for American Hustle. This is the latest film from writer-director David O. Russell takes a story from real life revolving around the Abscam scandal that involved capturing corrupt political officials. Christian Bale is a con man who falls in love with another con artist, played by Amy Adams. They both get caught up in a scheme pushed forward by FBI agent, played by a very curly-haired Bradley Cooper. Conning may be the only way for them to get out of this predicament, as long as it isn't screwed up by Christian Bale's character's wife, played by Jennifer Lawrence, who's quite a spitfire. Lots of things, lots of characters in this movie. I'll start with Abe this time. Abe, what did you think of American Hustle?
I thought it was a very good movie. For me, it did feel a little bit long, but I kind of forgive it because the performance is so great. And I know the performance is so great because there's this one scene where Christian Bale and Jennifer Lawrence are talking, and it's a little bit later in the film. And I just wanted to smack the shit out of Jennifer Lawrence. So it was that good of a performance. I believe so much of the characters and... Again, when it kind of gets down to it, it's kind of it pulls a somewhat of an Ocean's 11 where it sort of some things are revealed and you see how the real events took place. And I just definitely liked it. I definitely liked the whole entire idea of a person getting in way more over their head than they previously thought. Story about greed, story about the grays of life, which Christian Bale's character says pretty early on. And just the overall sort of, I guess, the craziness of it. It's not crazy, like Scorsese crazy, and it doesn't go into that sort of super dark territory like Scorsese's stuff does, especially toward the end where things climax and a lot of bloodshed happens. But it's pretty good, so I'll leave it at that for now.
Laramie?
I think that I didn't really find the story to be all that baked. I thought the ending is particularly rushed. That said, it's really an actor's movie, and all the characters are compelling, and it's entertaining throughout. And so it seems like David O. Russell's crew now is really like dialed in terms of just bringing great characters to the screen every single time. Like Jennifer Lawrence was, like, though you want to strangle her, she's amazing in that character.
Yeah.
She's really, really solid.
Oh! Oh!
Another fire!
No, Danny, not that one. That one's empty. We gotta use the big one.
I told you not to put metal in the science oven. What'd you do that for?
Don't make such a big deal. Just get another one.
I don't want another one. I want the one that Carmine gave me.
Oh, Carmine. I want the one that Carmine gave me. Carmine. Why don't you just marry Carmine? Get a little gold microwave and put it on a chain around your neck. You want to be more like Carmine? Why don't you build something like he does? Instead of all your empty deals, it's just like your fucking science oven. You know, I read that it takes all of the nutrition out of our food. It's empty, just like your deals. Empty. It's not bullshit. I read it in an article. Look, by Paul Berdour. Bring something into this house that's gonna take all the nutrition out of our food and then light our house on fire? Thank God for me.
And like even, what's his name, the comedian?
Louis C.K.
Yeah, just tremendous in this film. And so I thought, like, I enjoyed watching it throughout. I think it's a good watch. I just don't think the story was necessarily well thought out.
I'm basically with you, Laramie, where I think what it feels like is like a lot of my favorite directors get to have kind of one really cool movie that they can put out there where it's less about really saying much of anything, more about just having the chance to like work with a lot of actors that they're friendly with and kind of get this movie that has a lot of style and a lot of neat, interesting characters to put on the screen. And the story is not necessarily coming in second, but it doesn't feel like it's the most important aspect. And that's what I got from American Hustle. I think it's very entertaining because of this large ensemble cast, which is basically the Avengers of David O. Russell films, because it has everyone he's worked with, minus Mark Wahlberg for some reason, which I thought they used to be
Lone Survivor.
They used to be bros, I thought, so it's weird that he hasn't been in the last couple of David O. Russell movies. But it has this great cast who are all putting in these great performances, but the movie seems more about just having fun and less about really exploring the plot. I do think it's long because of that. I think it meanders a lot. If it was maybe a little tighter at like 2 hours as opposed to 2 hours and what, 20 or 15 or whatever, like it might have been a more compelling story just because there's more urgency involved. But there isn't, but that didn't bother me too much because I had a lot of fun watching the movie. And that's kind of where I'm at. Another thing is that I like that it's set in the 70s. It feels like, take away the Abscam thing, you could probably create another plot that doesn't necessarily need to be based off reality, and you could probably get the same story set in modern time, but I like getting this kind of 70s style. I like seeing all these various hairstyles, including Renner's pompadour and Bradley Cooper's really tight curls, and, you know, all the clothes, which are very cleavage-heavy for the women, and all the music that comes with it. Like, it just seems like a movie that wants to have a lot of fun, and I don't know.
Disco dance scene.
I don't know if that necessarily plays into this movie needs to get lots of Oscars, because I don't necessarily think that, but I think the performances are strong enough that it makes it highly watchable. So,
if you consider like Silver Linings and The Fighter like a trilogy with this, you know, in the same way like Hot Fuzz and Edgar Wright's trilogy, then I would say this is my least favorite of the grouping. But that said, it's still good.
Yeah,
still
for sure.
Still very watchable.
Yeah, when compared to those other two, I would agree with you.
I just watched Three Kings the other day because that's one of my favorite movies anyway.
Oh, that movie's great.
Actually, Larry, because I know the Silver Linings, that was your number one last year, correct?
Yeah, I really like Silver Linings.
Would that be your favorite David O. Russell, or do you have others?
God, they're also, like, The Fighter is really, really good, and Three Kings is really good. I actually like Huckabees quite a bit, and no one likes Huckabees.
I know, you're the one.
Yeah, I'm the guy. Yeah. I kept
him. You're the guy.
I like Wahlberg and Huckabees. I think Wahlberg's the best thing about Huckabees. And like...
This guy, what's he doing? Yeah, my favorite, I would say my favorite David O. Russell is probably Three Kings. Tough.
Were you going to say Spanking the Monkey?
Spanking the Monkey.
Yeah. Even that's good, though. That's even bad. That's a good... Yeah.
I like Courting with Disaster quite a bit as well. But
yeah.
He's had a long career now. I thought about that. He's been around since 94 doing movies. It's not like Tarantino's all that, you know, has too many movies going either. Anyway, I was watching Three Kings, which I love, and it has... That's a movie that feels like it's made tighter. Like, it feels like it has the same kind of, like, there's a lot of fun to be had in that movie, but it also has, you know, its serious angles, which this movie does as well. But it seems like it knows what it's going for and it accomplishes it, even with the trouble that it was made during the making of that movie. But regardless, that movie seemed like it was in fine form. Here, I just didn't get that sense as much, but I did have a lot of fun. And a lot of it comes from how David Russell was trying to handle this movie. It feels like it has a big Scorsese vibe in terms of this kind of the way it's shot, the way the editing is pushing it forward and everything. Like, it, for a long movie, it has this kind of kineticism, I guess, that really keeps it going and keeps you involved with these various characters, just because beyond just them, it also has, you know, these various zooms and things that are keeping you involved with what's going on.
I was going to mention that too when you were saying the Scorsese-esque editing. It's like the handheld coming in zooms on characters just for no reason other than, you know, the end of a scene.
Emphasis.
Yes.
Button.
Emphasis. Yeah. Quick cutbacks to, you know, people's backstories and whatever else. So, yeah, very much so. Even a cameo from Bob. So.
Yeah, Bob. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say the most problematic character for me was Christian Bale. I think he was just the least fleshed out in terms of his range of emotions. He was kind of steady, and I don't necessarily know if the situation would have had him steady. But I love Renner in this film as well.
I agree.
Julie Renner is really strong. Yeah,
I feel like Renner's going to be underrated in this because everyone else is big. I mean, Christian Bale gets a belly and hair to work with, and Bradley Cooper as his crazy whiny character mixed with, like, he was nominated last year, so he might as well get attention. Or Renner just plays like this mostly nice guy who, like, is...
Well, I think he is genuinely a nice guy because I don't think there's anything that paints him in a negative light. So I definitely think that Renner...
I mean, he has an level of involvement that suggests certain things, but he was brought in.
He walked away.
I'm aware.
No, I'm saying the line from the film.
I'm aware. Yeah.
I think that the characters are really good, too. It's just, yeah, I liked it more for the continual raising of the stakes, even though that really... I liked how it went to go hurt other people. Not necessarily that it didn't help out somebody else, but yeah, just because that person's super whiny and he just wants everything his way. He thought he was super cool and he's not.
Plus he had some tight curls.
Yeah, I mean, people are working for him now.
The rule of Hollywood is once you get a perm, you can pretty much expect some awards. I mean, that's how it goes.
I liked Amy Adams in this film a lot too, actually. I like Jennifer Lawrence, but I think Amy Adams, who gets kind of marginalized during the middle of this movie, but at the same time, I liked a lot of what she was giving, but I think, I guess one of my, it kind of leads to like the plotting again, but one of the problems is you're kind of with her a lot of the way to know what's going on, and there's not much suspense involving certain aspects of her character and what can come of her relationship between the two guys in this movie, if that makes any sense, without spoiling anything, I guess.
Well, and another take that I would say too, just to tack on, is just, you know, you're given sort of a lot of intrigue, and you're given, I don't know, is it sort of information on double cross, triple cross, but nothing really amounts to, or it doesn't really amount to a whole lot at the end. So take with it what you will.
Yeah, and the way they set up their ending is like kind of typical of regular movies, which is
kind of a letdown. Right?
Which Russell's kind of eschewed so far, it seems like.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually. It does kind of, it feels, I guess Hollywood would be the way to say it. Even in Silver Linings Playbook, there's differences going on there that kind of allow for you to have the ending that you have in that movie, while this movie is like, and then they all did this kind of thing, and yeah. Just not as tight. I mean, that's just not as tightly developed as a story, I guess, compared to the very animated characters that are involved in this movie.
Very animated.
Including the talking penguin that we've not talked about at all. That's what...
That was an elf, by the way. Yeah, same one.
Talking penguin elf. Yeah, it was a weird choice, but holidays, you know. Let's rate this movie. Once again, same scale, Abe?
I'd probably say theater still, even despite its length.
Laramie?
Yeah, I just don't know that any David Russell film is worth waiting on anymore. So I say theaters as well. I mean, the guy's good.
Yeah, I certainly say theaters. I feel like it'd just be an entertaining movie to watch in a theater with other people as well. So, all right, that was American Hustle. Let's move on to our next review. God, so many reviews, so little time. Let's move on to our next one here. We got Inside Llewyn Davis, the latest from the Coen Brothers.
What'd you say you played?
Folk songs.
Folk songs. Solo act?
No, I had a partner. He threw himself off the George Washington Bridge.
George Washington Bridge? You throw yourself off the Brooklyn Bridge, traditionally. George Washington Bridge. Who does that?
If I had wings, I'd know as dove, I'd fly the river.
Explain the cat.
What's its name?
I don't know.
It's the Gorfine's cat.
It slipped out and I don't have the key.
My honey, fare thee well.
Don't tell Jim.
Oh!
Obviously.
Well, I had a man.
All right, that should have been some of the trailer for Inside Llewyn Davis. This is the latest film from the Coen Brothers. The film focuses on basically a week or so in the life of a talented but struggling folk singer from Greenwich Village in the early 1960s. And also, there's a cat. I'll leave it there. Let's start with Larrabee. Larrabee, what did you think of Inside Llewyn Davis?
I just realized that these films are 60s, 70s, and 80s. We've managed the decades.
We hit the cycle, guys. We hit the cycle.
I thought this was one of the drier Coen works, and weirdly one of the more sentimental works. Like, I don't think it's super accessible for people who aren't Coen fans, but I'm like the biggest Coen fan in the world. And Oscar Isaac is so, so good in this film, and the small part John Goodman in is so, so good in this film. And there's so many moments that are set up just as these dark comic tragedies that really appeal to me, because sometimes it seems like life's like that occasionally, where just random stuff happens that doesn't work out your way. So I loved it. That said, I don't know how compelling it is going to be for the average viewer, and I don't know that the story is all that complicated or dynamic, but I just thought, in terms of acting and performances, like, really, really incredible.
Abe?
I pretty much agree with Laramie there, and what I'll say about it is, I don't think it's super accessible either, primarily because it's about some guy who, you know, I don't really get a sense that you really root for him, per se, because he's sort of a nasty character. He's kind of rude and temperamental. He goes through life thinking that he doesn't really want to sell out, and it really is to his detriment that occurred, or that he thinks that way, primarily because he doesn't want to put his name on a record, just because he needs the cash now to pay for things that he needs to do now, but he doesn't think about the royalties, and then he's basically an ultra hipster, and it's not really working out for him that way. And even when he tries to do right, it's kind of a terrible situation, because everything just blows up in his face, because he just wants to be real, man. But I like the realness when he plays for a record producer, and I like the way that situation turns out, because you might think that's the climax of the film, and it's not. And I do agree that the performances are strong. There's just very strange comedic turns here and there, like Garrett Hudlin with a cigarette, and I laughed about that stuff. But on the whole, I liked the music, and I liked performances. I like how it was very sectioned off, too, and maybe some people won't. Sectioned off meaning you don't see some characters anymore after a certain time. And so, yeah, I liked it. It's kind of a quieter film.
It certainly plays segmented in a way. There's kind of vignettes, I guess one could argue.
Sure.
I love this film. I was just absolutely on board with it. I'm a big Coen Brothers fan to begin with, but I was very... I wasn't anticipating this to be something like True Grit, or even, I don't know, Fargo, where it's, or I guess maybe even Burn After Reading, where they're kind of broader, they like more audiences can kind of accept what's going on in this kind of movie. It felt like it was going to be something more limited, like The Man Who Wasn't There, or Barton Fink, especially. Like, it has that kind of quieter feel. It has that. Maybe not necessarily esoteric, but like it feels like a Coen Brothers movie that's made because, like, A Serious Man would be another good example. Like, it one that's made for them, exactly, not like because the studio wanted us to try something out. Like, it was something that they wrote and they wanted to put out there. And I mean, it looks like, I mean, it was like CBS Studios, I think.
Yeah, CBS Studios.
Like, it, It's clearly not one that they could just shop around to like Universal and get them to put it up there. So regardless, I just really like this movie. I think Oscar Isaac is absolutely fantastic here. I think the entire supporting cast is just largely good and very, very game in what's required of them for a Coen Brothers movie with that kind of dialogue and that kind of speech patterns that goes with these kind of movies.
How we doing?
We're doing great.
Really? New record's doing well?
How we doing? Not so hot, I gotta be honest. Jenny, where's Cincinnati?
What?
Cincinnati, it's not in here.
It should be in there.
It's not in here, I'm telling you. Is it?
Cincinnati?
Yeah.
I got it.
What?
I got it.
You got Cincinnati?
Yeah, you want it?
Could I have it?
Should I bring it in?
Yeah.
Do you owe me something? You have to owe me something.
I wish. People need time, you know, get to know you, buy you as a solo act, even know you're a solo act. Cincinnati is not good.
That's it, right?
Yeah, this is it. God help.
Nobody knew us when we were a duo. It's not like me and Mike were ever a big act. It's not a big re-education for the public. Mel? Mel!
How you doing, kid?
There's a lot of humor in it that comes from various places, such as things involving cats and what genitalia they may or may not have. But it's such an interesting kind of weird little movie where you have these kind of great moments involving the music where it plays out in full the whole time and you see the results of certain scenes involving Isaac's character while he's playing music or after, and I was just with it the whole way through. I really enjoyed how this movie, which is largely plotless, played out. Yeah. I love the nature of this film's kind of turn and how it's structured, how it begins and ends. I just loved everything about that.
One, I think if you've listened to Brad and Laramie on movies, you've heard this little take before, but for new listeners, right? The Coen brothers are excellent at having worlds where the world happens to the character, as opposed to, I'd say, 95% of mainstream movies where the character is happening to the world. In other words, they're interacting with the world and kind of creating it in their own destiny because they're the main character and the camera just kind of follows them. Whereas like the Coens the Coens have this thing always like the world then happens to their character's choices. And to your point, Oscar Isaac's character's choices were pretty much bad, like routinely bad, and undermined his own, you know, destiny or happiness or accomplishments. And so it just seems like that's more like the world is. Like you don't go outside and change everything to better or to worse. You go outside and then things happen and then you kind of react. And the Coen brothers are excellent at presenting the worlds like that. And I think the closest parallel in terms of their other work would be, for me, The Man Who Wasn't There. And maybe it's just the black and white thing, but I think that's a dry film that I really love as well, that just kind of like where a character is put upon, you know, the whole time.
I definitely agree with that, actually. And I think The Man Who Wasn't There is a great movie. Billy Bob Thornton is fantastic in that movie and what he's required to do. And I agree with you, actually, with the color palette, too, because this movie, while not black and white, it's like, it's really...
It's got a blue tint.
It's really toned down. It feels like it pretty much could be black and white. If this was made in another decade, which easily could have been, like, it feels like it easily could have been a black and white.
It feels that way, though.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they certainly, you know, put the right screenshots, or not screenshots, they certainly put the right background and right folks in to make you really feel as though you're back in the 1960s, late 60s. One thing you said about the movie, or the music too, is just, it's a weird thing to have the actors, you know, they do the music, but then they sort of explain it, because I like this one dinner scene where these folks are asking him to play a song, and you think that, yeah, sure, it's not a bad thing, and he's kind of sarcastically putting it down. It's like, oh, this is the part where you keep telling me no, and you think that I'm being funny, but I'm not, and then he finally plays it. And then he actually has this little outburst that made a lot of sense to me, too, because he brings up an example. It's like, I don't invite you to dinner and then ask you to give me a lecture on, like, Mesoamericans. And I just thought that was darkly comedic because it deals with some other things, too, because of his partner, his music partner, and what the song that he's playing brings up. But, yeah, I just thought that, as sad as it is, it's also just very funny, just the way that these things are approached. And it's kind of a sarcastic humor, and I like that about it a lot.
It's certainly something that works in Coen Brothers films, and it's why I don't dislike this person. Like, he's obviously making choices that are just, you know, not helping him, but there are reasons that aren't, like, I mean, they're somewhat clearly explained, but you definitely get a sense of what's going on in this person's life and as to why he is acting certain ways that he is. And
we go ahead.
Go.
We should give some love to Justin Timberlake, man. He's great. He's great in this movie.
I agree. Yeah, yeah. And Carrie Mulligan. I think
they both
Carrie
are really
Mulligan's
good.
Just angry.
She is, but she works well with what's required of that character that has few things to play, but like she gets it across. And yeah, Timberlake is really good too. He has he's like the successful version of Oscar Isaac's character. And
well, yeah, and I think that's clearly brought up too when they have a conversation at a coffee table, and he's just like, "We're trying, and you're not." So. Or I guess it's more with June's character, or Jane's character. Also, did you guys think that was like the ghost of Bruno Kirby at the
bar?
Yeah.
The bartender. I can see him having a Bruno Kirby. Yeah, I can see the attitude there resembling someone like a Bruno Kirby character. Good call.
Well, like Leo Getz, too. There's a little of that in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. This may be the closest the Coens have come to making like a full-on musical, by the way. Like, all the songs in the movie are played out in full. Like, there's very few like cutaways within the song. Like, you hear the entire song played out like every time they play a song in this movie.
But unlike something with Shame, you don't feel like get the heebie-jeebies from it. Like, it's all kind of interesting and you want to listen to it, like being at a concert, you know?
Yeah. No.
That's sure. Very strange that you brought up Shame, because I thought of that movie while I was watching this too, and it's primarily because of the sort of segmented view of the movie, and it doesn't really show you anything other than maybe like a few days, I'm talking about Shame, of his life. And this is basically the same thing. I mean, it goes on a little bit longer, and there's even a point where he thinks that it's longer, but then they reel you back in by saying, that was 2 days ago, it's not even Saturday yet. And you think, oh, wow, yeah, it's actually still in the same week. And also, Shame doesn't really resolve anything per se. And this film, it doesn't really come to a full-on conclusion of what's going to happen either. And so I did think of Shame as well.
Depending on, I guess. Okay, I have a question, actually. Would you consider the ending of this film to be ambiguous, or do you think it has a definitive thing of what it's going for?
Yeah, I really questioned. I thought they were trying to say something with the ending that was maybe, for them, a little stranger. Like, they don't tend to do thinkers in that sense. Like, they usually are pretty straightforward with what they want to tell you, like in their messaging. And this one I need to go back, because I felt like some of the cadence of it suggested there was more to it than we understood, I guess is the best way I could say.
Yeah, I think on second viewing it might be different, but for me, I think that it was pretty straightforward as well. It's basically the character's like, man, you know, it's done. Like, folk music is over with. And it's just ironic because Bob Dylan is, or I guess there's a Bob Dylan song playing and could be prelude to greater things. So it's just I'll see you guys on the next time around, and it's kind of just like, yeah, if you just kept up with it, it would have been different.
The thing that throws me, and I don't know if both of you noticed this, but there's a scene that's repeated, but it's repeated differently.
Yes.
And that to me seemed 12 Monkeys Memento-ish, like something else was going on under the hood that I didn't quite grasp. But I brought this up to other people, and they didn't really seem too keen on it.
No, that's why I'm asking this question.
Was it sort of different?
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. Like, the whole point of it was different.
Because it made me go back and question, like,
with the timeline.
When did we go somewhere that we weren't, or that's different from where we were.
The scene's not spoilery, so I guess the one is something happens that continues the whole rest of the movie, and then the second time that thing doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Like the very action move. So it was like, huh. So it involves a cat. It's the best thing I can tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like, because it's not as if like I needed something like that to be like, oh, now this movie's way deeper. But like at the same time, it's like, huh. Like it gave me kind of an extra beat to think about while also considering the rest of this movie, which I was already in love with, because it's just such a fantastic. Like you mentioned John Goodman briefly. Like his scene is pretty fantastic. Him and Garrett Hedlund, who speaks more with his character here than he does in Tron Legacy. Just by having a cigarette that's constantly in the same position the entire time.
Can I bum a cigarette off you? I'm all out. 2 minutes later. But yeah, the John Goodman scene, that one was... I like the way, I don't know that much about music, but I just like the way that jazz musicians were being up on folks. Like, are you guys serious? Like, jazz, you're playing all these notes. You gotta play all of them in, like, whatever beat. Like, you guys, why don't you guys play on your ukuleles and your whatever? And it's like, yeah, funny, because I don't get it.
Solo act?
Yeah, now.
Now? Used to what? Work with a cat? Every time he'd play a C major, he'd puke a hairball.
He used to have a partner.
What happened?
Threw himself off the George Washington Bridge.
Well, I don't blame him. I couldn't take it either, having to play Jimmy Crack Corn every night. Oh, pardon me for saying so. That's pretty stupid, isn't it? George Washington Bridge. You throw yourself off the Brooklyn Bridge, traditionally. George Washington Bridge. Who does that?
Yeah, like random Crips and Bloods humor in the middle of music that's like
exactly.
totally tame to us at this point.
It's like you when you went to the Juggalo convention. It's like, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I think we've done enough about Inside Llewyn Davis, so let's rate it again. I'll go first. If this was on an IMAX screen, I would go to IMAX, but yeah, I love this movie, so okay, just the highest, yeah.
Yeah, I would say definitely in theaters, and I thought the sound design, to me, was strangely incredible, like the crispness of each of the character songs, and I'm not, like, a huge fan of folk music, like, I could take it or leave it. I like acoustic stuff, but yeah. I thought the music was really well done, and I've listened to the soundtrack a bunch at my off time.
Abe?
I definitely say theater, and primarily because of the studio, or I guess theater quality stereo, and yeah, I've definitely listened to fairly well a number of times on the album, and that's a great song.
Yeah, no, Please, Mr. Kennedy just gets me going. Like, if that was, like, an alarm clock, I'd be all over that. Like, right?
I'd be like, turn it off!
Because it's a great timer. Just be like, 10, Space. 9, 8, 7, order. 6, 5, and just be like, all right, I guess it's time to get up. It's time for lunch.
Order. Space. Oh, we're going to do the song.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
I thought, like, the who wrote this line is amazing, too. Because, yeah. Like, you're like, oh.
And then Space just drops.
Yeah, Like,
well, just, like, the whole buildup of it, like, this guy making, like, random noise, like, what's happening over here? And, like, the song
plays. I just love how everyone was really into it. Even the music producer, like, I love this tune. And Lewin's just like, what are we doing? And then, again, he just makes bad decisions, right? It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, if you sign here and just release it, you know, we're not going to give you royalties. And it comes up
well,
later.
Well, even that one, like, yeah, obviously that was a horrible decision he made.
Yeah.
But you see what, I mean, the money's going to something very specific that it's
exactly.
Like, yeah. I can see why he's doing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it sort of goes back to American Hustle. There's a line that says, like, maybe all we have is to choose between terrible choices, you know? Like, so I think that's a case of, like, he made the bad choice, but that was a choice almost anyone would make at that point, unfortunately.
And, of course, Ron Burgundy, you know, he had to give up maybe his job so his wife could succeed. So, obviously, the theme of bad choices is
either
running rampant in this podcast episode.
Bad choices, see in theaters, and decades past, the themes of this podcast.
If only one of the characters in American Hustle sang a song, we could have another recurring theme.
We'd be in there, right, like, somewhere.
You did a song from, what's his face? Adam. Jeremy Renner and Christian Bale, they were singing.
Were they singing?
They sang that one, I don't know what song it was.
It's like Volare or something. Yeah, okay. They definitely sing. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's
boom.
Trifecta.
Got it. We got it, guys. Happy holidays.
Tour de force.
All right. So we've done all three movies. Guess we got a little time left. Dave, you got a game?
I do have a game.
Hold on. Okay, go on. Got it. Got it in there.
Thanks. It's 8 questions here, and it's basically, it's called Did Brick Say That? So you're going to choose between whether Brick Tamlin actually said something or whether he didn't.
So, hold on. So in this game, you've also – presumably you've also come up with sayings that aren't from Brick but that you'd think Brick could have said?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I'm excited for this. Go on.
All right. First one. I love lamp.
Well, yeah, of course.
Brick, pretty easy, right? Yeah, pretty easy. Yeah. All right. Second one. I picked up a burrito at the end of the lunch line.
True.
False?
It's a false, because he doesn't actually say that.
What?
he actually just says, he describes where he picked it up.
Oh, the garbage or something.
Yeah, it's like, I picked it up at the end of the lunch line. It's like, that's the garbage, Brick.
Yeah.
Like, he just laughs, and it's like, I'm choking. All right, number two. I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
True.
That's actually false.
God damn it. The hell.
That's actually just...
That's more like Farrell and Baxter. Like, a whole wheel of cheese? That's impressive. I'm not even mad.
All right, the next one. I once ate an entire bowl of Legos.
I'm going to let you go first.
That's true, I think.
That is true.
True then. Yeah. Crushed it.
Yeah. All right. I can always guess how many jelly beans there are in a jelly bean jar, even if
that's
I'm wrong.
That's true. Yeah, that's
definitely
true.
Kristen Wiig's really funny in that movie too. Like,
they're so awkward together.
There's a lot of Brick in this movie, and I can see how that could maybe play against the film. But I laughed at a lot of it.
Laughed when they had that weird, random emotional outburst in the office. And I love how the lady kept a straight face. It's like, I can see you. You're fired.
I like her too, June Diane Raphael. That's Paul Scheer's wife. She's on NTSF SDSUV.
Yeah. Cool.
And on the podcast, How Did This Get Made? Of course.
She has her own podcast.
Oh, it's funny.
Her and Paul Scheer and Jason Manzoukas. Yeah, the great podcast.
It's really funny.
How Did This Get Made?
Okay.
Where they
Did This Get Made?
Yeah, it's they take a movie and they dissect. They basically go over why this movie is either terrible or fun terrible.
Three more. Farewell then. Ian, would you like to go to a party in my pants?
That one's true.
That's true.
All right.
I feel like all the ones from Anchorman 1 will nail.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are true fans. Next one. All right. I have a collection of He-Man toys.
I'll say false. Yeah.
Pretty false. All right. Yeah.
That sounds like a stepbrother's quote.
I was actually just pulling something from sort of related to his 40-year-old virgin stuff.
Clever boy.
Number two, I just burned my tongue. The whole quote is, I just burned my tongue.
Yeah, I'll say true.
Yeah, it's probably because I had to redo it. And
no, yeah, that didn't help. I was saying true already.
Yeah, I was like, what are you doing? You're sabotaging yourself here. All right, and last one. Anyone's up for the radio?
I'll say false.
Yeah, I'll say false, too.
It's false. This is Brian Fantana quote.
Aha.
There you go. So that was things Brick might have said.
Thanks for that game.
I should have made it more towards 70s, 80s, and 50s music.
I just like that the stakes were so high. That's what really got me going. All right, so we've completed our reviews, and Abe and I still have a few things that we're going to go over, including some listener feedback. But now I know Laramie's going to sign off. So, Laramie, where can people find more of your work?
Twitter, LAREMY, or Brad and Laramie on Movies. Available on iTunes near you.
Great. And I know you're sending out the documentary to some film festivals, so hopefully in 2014 maybe we'll get to see Whoop Dreams.
I believe you will. We'll be doing a couple of screens no matter what, even if we are rejected everywhere. So
awesome. Great. Well, great. Thanks for coming on the show with us, Laramie.
Thanks, Laramie.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, joyous Kwanzaa, and if you've already celebrated Hanukkah, well, I'm sorry I missed you.
Okay. Thank you, man.
Yep.
We'll talk to
Take
you.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, great. Glad to have Laramie on the show. It's always fun.
Thanks, Laramie.
Yeah, let's do some Out Now Quickies.
Quickies, TM.
Now we talk about a couple of main movies of the week, because that's what we just did, but every now and then we have lots of other movies we see as well, so we have something called Out Now Quickies.
TM.
Abe, did you see anything else this week?
I did not, but I did watch the Christmas episode of Bob's Burgers, and it was frightening and funny.
Oh, sounds exciting. I gotta check that one out. I saw a few things. I saw Her, which we'll talk about in like weeks time from now. But
I am sad that you guys saw Her.
But see it. I also saw 47 Ronin, which by the time this podcast comes out, I am allowed to talk about, so I will. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it.
Right.
Lords of Salem, the latest from Rob Zombie. I really like this movie a lot. It's maybe my favorite horror movie of the year.
It's strange because it got such negative reviews.
It actually has it's at like 49. It's not that bad. For a horror movie especially, it's pretty mixed. But
I've heard that it kind of meanders.
It definitely has a very deliberate kind of pacing, but it works for the kind of movie that it is. And regardless, I was just so like, because I honestly didn't know what to expect, because I was hearing mixed things about it. But I did not expect to love it as much as I did, and I really liked Lords of Salem. And then lastly, I saw a movie called Redemption with Jason Statham, which is on Netflix streaming right now. It's from writer-director Stephen Knight, who wrote Eastern Promises. Redemption has Jason Statham as this kind of homeless guy who's on the run from a court-martial, and because he was like an ex-Special Forces. And it's just this kind of, for a Jason, it's like, it's a very unlike a Jason Statham action movie. It's just him kind of dealing with, like, this, his crazy life that he had, and, like, trying to figure out his way. And it's, I was really taken by Statham's performance in this film. The film itself is all right, but it's very well shot, and I really like Jason Statham as an actor in this movie, which is nice to say.
Does he have karate action scenes?
He has scenes where he fucks people up, but that way.
With bottles, I'm assuming. No, I want to say for my TM. I've been playing the Uncharted series. I finished Uncharted 1, and then I'm on Uncharted 2, and they've obviously fixed a lot of the problems that I had in the first game.
I like that you finished Uncharted 1 already, because that game plays so fucking quickly. It's so much fun.
It is very quickly. And one of the things that I hated about Uncharted 1 was when you have grenades, how you aim and throw them. And that was annoying, because you have to tilt the control, and it's just not quick. It's not effective, unless you just want to randomly throw things. The second one, all you have to do is hold down the L2 trigger, and then just release.
I'm glad that the audiences from 2010 are getting the input on how to throw grenades for Uncharted 2. Thank you for
that.
Yeah,
I've actually traveled back through time. We're actually in 2010 right now.
All right. But no, glad you're playing Uncharted. I love that video game series. I can only hope that there's an Uncharted 4 on PS4, because it would just be amazing. That said, Last of Us from the same studio is also amazing, so there you go. I should probably note that I put up my top video games of the year on whysoblue.com as well, which includes some of the games that we mentioned.
I hope they also make it for PS3.
No, you're out of luck. Let's get some minor box office stuff going. We didn't really predict box office results last week, but we didn't predict. We just decided that Anchorman would probably be in first place.
Yeah.
And it was in first place. It wasn't in first place. It was. Hobbit's still in first place.
Good old Hobbit.
But Anchorman did manage to make $40 million from Wednesday to now, which is impressive enough, because obviously that means there is a pretty strong fan base for Ron Burgundy.
Do you know what the budget was on that?
Like 50.
Okay, so yeah.
At the rate it's going, it's going to easily match that and double it. So, but yeah, The Hobbit's still making money because it's a Hobbit movie, so there you go. Walking with Dinosaurs, which I'm sure all of us were really excited about.
I did not even realize it was actually going to be out during this time. I thought it was going to be
If you're shooting live-action sequences and adding CG dinosaurs, the only thing that screams is December Christmas release. And so obviously, it came out, and it's doing exactly what it's doing. Not making much money, so there you go. Mr. Banks and American Hustle also opened wide this weekend, and American Hustle made quite a bit of money, actually. Saving Mr. Banks did fairly well as well, given the kind of movies that these are, so there you go. And Her is in like 3 or 4 or 5 theaters, and that made a pretty nice chunk for its per theater average. And yeah, that's box office.
TM?
Thanks. And what else before feedback? We'll just end on feedback, but what else? The Audible, of course. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/podcast. There are over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 device. For the listeners about now, if they're in a name, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to come with it, giving you the opportunity to check out their service. Offhand, Dave, do you have a book to recommend?
I don't have a book, but I would say Any in the Cupboard for no real reason other than the first book I thought of.
It's offhand.
And I will tell you that when I read that in third grade, I was very teary-eyed at the end because I knew that Omri was not going to be able to have his friend and his cowboy friend anymore because he turned back into plastic. But the author went on to write like 2 more books. So there you go.
Yeah, the second book called The Mom That Burned the Cupboard, that's a really depressing one as well.
The worst one ever.
Yeah, but yeah, you can download that book or any other of the many, many choices you have at Audible. Keep that file. Check out the service. If you don't like it, you can unsubscribe, but still keep the book that you downloaded for free. So there you go. AudibleTrial.com is out now podcast. All right, Abe, let's do this. Let's get to listener feedback.
Feedback, feedback, feedback,
feedback. This is where we, of course, read the different answers and answer some questions from our various listeners, thanks to the support on the Facebook and Twitter page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast and twitter.com/outnow_podcast. So here we go. First things first, favorite movie involving an actor that added a lot of weight onto him or herself for the role. Scott has Raging Bull being like the most obvious answer. Abe, you put Tim Allen for the Santa Claus. I'm sure there was lots of work done to make that out.
It's because in the trailer says, "Do you think or you call this a little bit of weight?"
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought of, and I was like, "Oh, that's clever."
Thanks.
Linda has Vincent D'Onofrio for Full Metal Jacket and Charlize Theron for Monster. I'll make this the Christian Bale achievement category.
I wanted to bring that up during our review.
He just goes up and down and up and down. It's ridiculous.
And I thought during the film he's already said that he's not going to go drastically down anymore because it just puts his health in like such a damper mood. And I remember when he was doing the Machinist, he said that his diet consisted of whiskey and cigarettes. And so I thought, oh, wow, he's not going to go down anymore, but it doesn't mean he's not going to go up because he puts on a lot of weight for this. I thought at first it was some sort of gel that they may have pasted onto his body.
Nope.
But the more I looked at it, I was like, nope, he actually put on that weight.
That's a full Bale tummy.
Yeah. Like his arms and fingers got fat too. It's amazing. So, yeah, I mean, Christian Bale, go you. We then asked, what comedy would you like to see a sequel for? Mike writes Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which is a very funny movie. If
Tucker
you
and Dale versus Evil versus Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. Let's see it. Let's have that up.
That would have, if they could actually write it like pretty cleverly, yes, do it. Jordan writes Used Cars. Joe writes The Other Guys, which we brought up during our review of Anchorman with Adam McKay. Not that it would be a sequel, but we talked about The Other Guys.
Gotcha.
Jason writes, Seven Psychopaths. Yes, I went there.
Not sure where he went, but whatever. I like Seven Psychopaths, so I don't know how you would do a sequel, but whatever.
Josh writes, The Jerk. Maybe. I mean, Steve Martin goes back to his family, I guess.
And... Steve Martin made a sequel to The Jerk now, and maybe be the most amazing, most anticipated movie of the year. Like, I would see that in a heartbeat.
I would see it in a heartbeat. Like, I know a lot of people that would see that in a heartbeat. And Eric writes, Olympus Has Fallen, the hilarious live-action sequel to Team America.
That was very good. I like that.
Clever.
Favorite movies that really enjoy portraying 70s duds and hair? Mike Jones has Corvette Summer. Maxwell has Boogie Nights, perhaps. Danny has Kill the Irishman. Jason has Grease. And Joe Jens has Cannonball Run.
I have nothing to add.
I was trying to think of a good one, but Boogie Nights is kind of my go-to answer.
Like every 70s hairstyle,
I guess Anchorman. Like I love the Anchorman soundtrack. I love seeing just them in that world. So I mean, can't argue that either.
Yeah, I love Brian Fantana's jockey. Yeah, that was so awkward. But I love how Paul Rudd is just down to do it. You know what I mean?
I do. Yeah, it feels like he got the least to do in this movie. By the way,
Anchorman does. Too. Yeah,
Champ like didn't have a ton to do, but at least it seemed like there was more of Champ than there was Brian Fantana.
You brought it up too, which is they definitely put Brick in a lot
because everyone loves Brick. Like Brick was obviously like a standout character next to Ron Burgundy from the first movie, so it's like, well, let's give him a lot to do, and probably because Steve Carell demands more money these days.
Still has some to do the way we're back though. Move on to questions.
Yeah.
All right. So Joe asks us, what well-known movie star do you keep forgetting their name? My answer, Ethan Hawke. I can never remember that guy's name. To answer your question, I do remember Ethan Hawke pretty easily. I do forget Jeremy Renner's name a lot, just like I said in this podcast. It's like, that guy.
Forget Jeremy Renner's name?
That guy. I always want to call him, like, Jackson or something. I don't know. It's
Jackson?
Jeremy Renner. Yeah, I don't know. That guy confuses me from time to time. There's also the two guys that sort of look the same. They played Toby Jones. I forget his name a lot too. I remember it now, but I always think of Capote, and then I think of the other guy's name. Doing a terrible job today.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
But I can recognize Philip Seymour Hoffman from like a photo and recognize him. But for Toby Jones, I'm like, that's the guy from the other Capote and the Hunger Games. I can never remember his name.
Yeah, I it's not really an issue that bothers me actually. Like I'm pretty good at the.
Aaron has photographic memory with actors and actresses. And
kind of. I mean, I don't really run into a situation where I forget people's names. Like, I just know a lot of the obscure ones really well. And I especially like pronouncing the incredibly complex ones. Like, my latest favorite name from Blue is the Warmest Color, Adele Exarchopoulos. I don't even have that name in front of me. It's just fun to say. Next question here. which I have somewhere. There it is. Do you think Paul Rudd should play Ant-Man? Speaking of Paul Rudd, I've been holding off on this question just because the rumors were circling the fact that Paul Rudd could play Ant-Man in Edgar Wright's upcoming Ant-Man Marvel adaptation, and now it's been confirmed that he is going to play Ant-Man. And with that said, I was a supporter of this idea beforehand, and I'm a supporter of this idea now, because I like Paul Rudd a lot. I like Edgar Wright films. Put those two together, and you got yourself a delicious Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. What comic
book? Ooh, I like that, unless you're allergic to chocolate or peanut butter. But
well, Officer Reese's can help you out with that one.
But yeah, I definitely think that Paul Rudd, he doesn't really do anything that I don't like. And also, I think that Edgar Wright is smart enough to choose a person that he can work with and can make the film that he wants. I mean, I've seen Edgar Wright's work. I enjoy it. So I have no qualms about it at all.
Like, as much as I like Simon Pegg, like, I'm glad to see that Edgar Wright's not just going back to the well, per se, to get a lead for his movie. Like, I'm glad that he's thinking outside of the box, frankly, because, I mean, you have a superhero movie, and you're not exactly thinking, oh, Paul Rudd could play a superhero, but, like, I like that that's the choice now, and I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes. And it's not like, I can't think of a Marvel Studios Marvel movie where, like, the casting was the problem, so.
That's true. And then Izzy asks us, whatever happened to the girl who played Lainey Boggs in 1999's teen comedy She's All That? Great question.
I mean,
if you go to whysoblue.com, you'll see in the side panel advertisement what happened to the cast of She's All That. It pops up, you know, randomly. I think she's just living a quiet life.
I think Rachel Lee Cook, I mean, she doesn't act like a ton, but she's been on, like, random TV shows here or there. She's on Robot Chicken a lot. She was on Psych for, like, a 6-episode run, I think, or something like that.
She was like an
old girlfriend of Sean's.
Of Sean, yeah.
Yeah. And,
I like to think of you and I as Sean and Gus.
Okay.
You know, because you went to UC Santa Barbara. And,
I know. And... You know. Never forget about you. I mean, originally Cook, like, she didn't take off after She's All That, but she's, you know, been in things. Just,
well, I mean, it's hard. I don't think there was really anybody in that really did. I mean, Freddie Prinze and...
Well, Matthew Lillard's face. Matthew Lillard's still doing things and directing movies and still starring right. TV shows and movies. I mean, it's like...
But I'm saying, like, even those guys were, I guess, well-known before that, because it was during that 90s teen craze thing, And Rachel Lee Cook, yeah, sure. You know,
I feel like Izzy asked this question. Didn't Izzy ask us the Freddie Prinze Jr. question also? Is he just going through the cast and sees all that? Yes.
Next would be Matthew Lillard and the guy who ate pubic hair on his pizza? I don't know.
What guy was that?
I don't know. I don't know that guy's
name.
Is that
She's All That still?
Yeah, it's because that's what Freddie Prinze makes him do after.
I know Paul Walker was in She's All That.
Really?
Yeah, oh. He's the jock that makes the bet with him.
Well, I guess they're just,
he's the jock who makes he makes the bet to begin with him. He's like, I bet you can't date that girl.
I keep on thinking of
Not another teen. Eric Christian Olsen. Speaking of names that I know, Eric Christian Olsen playing the ball.
I knew that you would think that I was whispering something in her ear, but I wasn't. And so it's just, yeah.
The best question is what happened to Usher's acting career after She's All That, because he played a pretty amazing campus DJ in that film.
Man, that is whack.
Movie. Is that Dooley Hill though, or is that somebody else?
No, that's not Dooley Hill.
No, it's what's his name?
I was hoping you were gonna continue with the other phrases that he uses.
Oh, because I don't care for him enough. So.
No, I just like how that's exactly what they say it's gonna happen.
Oh, it's Dion Richmond. That's right. Okay.
Dooley Hill. No.
I know. I didn't think it was Dooley Hill. Because Psych is so serious.
The West Wing is, but that wasn't on during the same time.
Yeah, but he was always the wacky black guy in the West Wing. That's not true at all. That's why
I was like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? There's no point where he's saying that's whack.
You don't remember that scene where he's with Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men, and he's like, oh, that's whack. Broken up now.
There's like a secret scene with him and Toby. They're just talking, and just like, man, the president's going off the rails. Man, that is whack. It's like... I can't believe you, Aaron Sorkin. You went there.
More like Bartlett for governor next year. Am I right? Say what? Can we keep going on this for an hour? Do listeners love this or what?
Some sort of gang initiation.
Let's move on. Let's move on now. Thank you for all the feedback, guys. Thank you very much. We love getting that. We love reading it on the show and answering questions, what have you. Let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are new movies coming out on Blu-ray and DVD this week. Not a big time because it's Christmas. You don't get a lot of releases, but you do get two. Oh, well, one this week. One is Insidious Chapter 2.
Perfect for Christmas?
Yep, you know it. If you didn't get Cole,
you're saying it like you.
Regardless, Insidious Chapter 2 comes out. And the week after, Don John comes out on Blu-ray, actually.
So. Ah, Don John, yeah.
I think that's the movie about a man dealing with his family, his friends, his car, his church, his ride, his girls, and his
friends. Where he lost his memory and he's living on a desert island and he grows long hair and then... No, wait, I think that's Don Juan DeMarco.
Not necessarily next week, but the next show we do, we'll probably focus on Walter Mitty and Wolf of Wall Street, if I had to take a guess. Does that sound right to you, Abe?
Yeah, it certainly does sound like a plan, primarily because the holiday is a weird time for everyone's schedule, and also a lot of movies come out during this time. So we're going to fit in as many reviews as we can, because why not?
All right. So yeah, I think that's going to do it for this episode, which is probably longer than we expected for a bonus episode, but there we are. And we got a lot of reviews done, a lot of other stuff done, too. So here we go. You can, of course, find all of my work at thecodeofzeke.com. You can find all my written movie reviews, as well as at wisesofblue.com. We are all doing our top 10 list of Wise of Blue currently. I'll have three up by the time this podcast goes out. The best Blu-rays of the year, some of the video game list, and probably the worst films of the year list. I'll have my top 10 films later on in the month. Twitter.com/AaronsPS4 as well. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusnews.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusnews, #AmongThieves.
You can, of course, find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes and at Stitcher. Also at hhwld.com. That is the network that hosts our show, along with the other shows involving comics and games and fun stuff like that.
Our episodes can also be found at outnow.podbean.com, as well as youtube.com/outnowpodcast.
Feel free to email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on any of the movies that we reviewed today or your thoughts on the upcoming releases that are, you know, spreading wider and wider as we go.
Interact with us over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast as well as twitter.com/outnow_podcast. Join the fight.
And be sure to check out the various random pictures that we tend to post on our Tumblr, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. And feel free to send us a voicemail, 972-798-3830. You can hear your voice on the show, perhaps. Granted, we actually have to receive the voicemails first ahead of time and make sure they, you know, fit for the show that we're doing. And that's going to do it for this week's episode, or this day's episode. We'll see how many bonuses we manage to get out during the holiday season. But with that said, happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.
Have a safe and happy holidays, and make sure to tune in to Out Now There Today while you're out doing things that do not concern us whatsoever.
And this is where Aaron and I break into song. Happy holidays. Happy holidays. Happy holidays to you.
Woo-hoo. Until next
time.
That
was excellent.
So long.
Sorry. I was just repeating and going with your tone of voice and your inflection.
So long.
And goodbye.
That's the best walking you can do. I like it.
What?
You swam with strength. You loved with grace. You touched us all with your expressionless face. Dobie, oh Dobie, may you find many treasures, both emotional and monetary. You were wise and loving and never contrary. Dobie, oh Dobie, I'll never forget thee. Passionless face. Dobie, I'll never forget thee. Dobie.
none of this matters because Morris Chestnut confirms third best man movie. Boom!
Are you serious?
Yes!
Yes!
Who loves chicken? You do!
We do!
Delicious chicken! Swing on through! Meet the crew! Woo-hoo!
I'm local San Diego legend Champ Kind, and I believe in two things. Good chicken, and that the census is a way for the UN to make your children gay. So come on by and grab a wing, because when you do, you'll say, whammy!
Yeah, I got to roll.
Yeah, okay. Gentlemen.
Before you roll, what is this what is this repeat thing, the future timeline or the timeline class you guys are chatting
about? Yeah, in the very opening, remember the cat escapes, and so he has to take him because the door is locked?
Yeah.
In the last scene, or maybe penultimate thing.
Coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh, you're right. That's the same. Is that the same?
He's at the Gordsteins or whatever, and he prevents the cat from getting out. And then that night, because
he gets punched in the face again.
That previous night, he was in the beginning of the movie, you just kind of get hints that like, why are you making fun of this person? I'm hitting you now. And then at the end of the movie, before the cat thing happens, he makes fun of some woman at the show and everything. Then after the cat thing that night, when he plays, then he goes outside and gets punched in the face for the exact same reasons by seemingly the same person.
Yeah. So it does. Totally.
It feels like it could be like some kind of weird time loop, or that he's just stuck in a circle like 12 Monkeys. Like, that's a great example. Like, it feels like I'm not saying that there's some kind of crazy sci-fi element to the movie, but it certainly seems like there's a grander purpose for the way it begins and ends. And
interesting. I definitely have to take a second look at that, because I just thought that was a second thing that happened, but I was wondering why it was showing me the same exact setup as the beginning. Because, you know, he puts his head out, and it's like exactly perpendicular to the door frame. And I was thinking, oh, well, you know, he finally just puts the cat in because he remembers it from the first time.
But it also got me
thinking. But then he gets punched in the face again, which I didn't think about.
It got me thinking, too, because they reveal the cat's name is Odysseus. And Odysseus, of course, is on his Odyssey.
Ulysses.
Like he's Ulysses. Sorry, Ulysses. Guys, wait. This is the same.
Odysseus.
Well, Ulysses is in the Odyssey. So,
yeah.
I mean,
it's the same. Ulysses and Odysseus, those are the same names. But like, I mean, it's the Odyssey, yeah, and it gets
the George Washington Bridge.
Yeah. That kind of I mean, having the Odyssey kind of factor in as this weird kind of thing, it makes it. I mean, he's on a journey that lasts forever, and it kind of seems like maybe Oscar Isaac is on this journey that's lasting forever.
Is Ulysses a Greek mythology?
Yes.
It's funny because they also bring up Icarus in Anchorman 2, so boom, we just super nailed this. Icarus flew too close to the sun, so whose wings melted?
I'm saying Odysseus and Ulysses are the same
name. My bad.
Ulysses is the Latin version of Odysseus. It's the same.
And they've already done the Odyssey, though, in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. Like,
exactly, yeah. Well, yeah, that's why it kind of times into that as well. Anyway, let's get back to the show so I can send you off.
body for my unborn child. Oh, fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. So show us a bird flying high above. Life ain't worth living without the one you love. Oh, fare thee well, my honey, fare. Honey, fair.